Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Lorraine, have a look at these.
What have you got for me? What are they, Trish? I'm not sure I like that. What is it?
These are shotgun cartridge festive lights.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, so they are red and green empty shotgun cartridges, all strung as Christmas lights. And guess what?
Not Neil.
Yes.
Where did he get those, for God's sake?
On the internet, he found them. He searched them up and thought they're the most genius thing ever. And this is his contribution to our Christmas decoration scheme.
Do you think he searched them up thinking, I know what Trish would like. She would like some Christmas lights for the tree that look like shotgun cartridges, because of her long heritage of killing things in the garden.
Yes, exactly. Can I say they aren't just looking like shotgun, they actually are. So they are empty, used shotgun cartridges.
I often wonder how you two found each other, Trish, sometimes.
It's a bit of a mystery.
It is a mystery, yes.
Anyway, needless to say, they won't be going... anywhere near the Christmas tree or anywhere in the rest of the house. There's a very small room that has the boiler in it and some of his toolkit, and I think they might be going in there.
Well, I think we might find him wrapped up, tied up with them in there, don't you?
Welcome to this special Christmas edition of Postcards from Midlife. We hope you like this sleigh bell special effects. We haven't spared any expense on producing this episode, I can assure you. So we are less than a week away from the magical day, Lorraine. Are you feeling in a festive mood?
Well, I am, Trish. I am, because I've been having my mince pies for breakfast, because you know I like a mince pie. After
delicious.
I have my kefir yogurt. Though my festive celebrations, Trish, and you're bored of this by now, I know, is I've managed to contract the COVID.
Yes, you have.
As my relatives refer to it, which I got from my teenage son, which he must have got at school, I think. Now, he's fine, though, because he's in isolation in the basement. He's just playing FIFA the whole time, so it benefits him greatly.
Yeah, he's happy. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm upstairs, isolated from everybody, not getting the Christmas shopping. Well, not getting anything done, basically. So that, I think, probably sums up this whole gender imbalance of life, doesn't it?
I'm
he's
sure
happily
it does.
Building his FIFA team, and I'm up here worrying and blowing my nose.
And I bet you can't taste your mince pies anymore, can you? Because your taste and smell is all gone to...
Well, it's not stopping me eating them.
Oh, no. I was very saddened when I got that text. I think you're on the mend now, which is good. So, you know, there's time.
Trish might have to stay in isolation for some time to come. Who knows?
You might quite enjoy it. You never know. But listen, I've been getting quite festive as well. I've been to a lovely carol service. I've survived my first hangover of the season after a girls' night out, which was
very good. It's not true, is it? You have a hangover a week.
Oh.
You're making that up.
Actually, I might do for the next few weeks, but not in general, not in general. And maybe because of Neil's awful shotgun lights, I bought some new baubles for the tree this year. We've had the same ones for about 20 years, which I think is really good. And they're very nice. They're all kind of gold and purple, and I quite like them. But someone got a bit tipsy last year and had a little stumble into the tree.
When you say tipsy, Trish, your tipsy elf's Neil again, isn't it? I mean, that man... Yeah, that man, your tipsy elf, he's tiddly from December the 1st onwards, isn't he? Which I think might be the best way to approach Christmas, don't you think?
Yes, I think a lot of people aren't they? But I think he's extra excited this year because we're doing something different for Christmas Day. We're having our first ever Friendsmas. We're not having any family. We're having friends. It's going to be 14 of us. And I'm really excited about it because I love these friends. But I am steeling myself for the most enormous amount of work that will be going into it. And for all our sort of rating, Neil, he is very helpful with all the preparations in the run up. He gets very excited. He gets stuck in. He does all the jobs.
He gets very excited about everything.
He does. Trish. Yes.
That's why we like him.
He's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of energy. But the problem is on the day, great in the morning, but then as soon as the guests arrive, everything goes out the door. He's so excited. He can't do anything else. So everything, I have to do everything, from that point onwards.
He's kind of the host, isn't he? He's the excited
Except
host.
He forgets to get people drinks. So I'm still having to get people drinks while I'm having to get the canapes out and do all of that.
You're
so it's
staff.
Just, yes, it is the timing. The getting the timing right, I think, is the thing.
Well, I think all midlife women, I mean, that this is the law of physics, isn't it? Mm. We do Christmas. Women do Christmas. I mean, the card writing, that is driving me mad, the card writing.
Oh, yeah.
That tips me over the edge every year. The hamper sending, table decorating, cooking, tidying up. And then, Trish, what usually happens, and I know this happens to you, is that while you or I are loading the dishwasher, I mean, I'm not often allowed to do it, but I am at Christmas because my husband's a bit like Neil, he just disappears off to host. They all the quality street, don't they?
Yes,
and then
they
by
do.
The time you and I get to it, it's just that bloody coffee cream one.
Coffee
isn't
cream
it?
Or strawberry cream, I also can't stand.
Yes.
Don't like it.
It's frazzled. It's Christmas frazzled. We've got a plan, though, haven't we? We're going to discuss this.
Yes, we do. Because in this episode, we're going to be sharing Christmas tales and tips from our wonderful Facebook group. And Lorraine, you've been speaking to some big brain bona fide family experts, too, for some really useful advice on coping with the physical and emotional frazzle, I would say, and keeping spirits up if it does all get a bit too much.
Yes, it's the frazzle that tips us over the edge. But I'm really looking forward to what our guests have got to say about the Christmas frazzle, because we have got for our Christmas special none other than the Fortunately podcast hosts, Fee Glover and Jane Garvey.
Yay.
Do you think our listeners know the very significant history-makingness of this moment?
Oh, I know. It is. It is. It will go down in history.
It's the first time ever, I think, that there will be four middle-aged women on one podcast talking about the chuff of life, as Fee and Jane would say. Now, if we tried to get that commissioned by the powers that be in broadcasting, we'd just be laughed out of the room, wouldn't we?
We would.
Four older women talking about the chuff of life, they'd say, go away, ladies. Anyway, I am a bit nervous about these radio gurus because, as you know, Trish, I'm extremely competitive.
Just a little, just a tad.
Mm-hmm. Even the COVID, Trish, it hasn't slowed me down.
No, frankly. You've got competitive COVIDness as well.
Yes. So I should be putting that all on my social media. But I have backed down a bit from this competitiveness because they are multi-award winning broadcasters with decades of experience on the airwaves. And we have been called podcasting's answer to the menopausal Morecambe and Wise. So I think we may be benefiting more than they do on this, mightn't we?
I mean, we're fans of Fortunately. We know loads of our lovely listeners.
Huge fans.
Fortunately as well. But their show is a little bit different from ours because they have actually got quite a lot of male guests on, don't they? And male listeners, which we don't have, or rather we thought we didn't have up until now, because we got an email from a chap called Brian all the way from New York last week, didn't we?
Yes, we did, didn't we, Trish? What joy it gave me during the COVID to read that. Oh, for the arrogance and confidence of the older male, I feel. Wouldn't it be magnificent if you could bag that arrogance and confidence and sell it in Holland and Barrett?
Yes.
Thank you, Brian, for your email. I do hope you are listening. Brian was very taken with our episode with Marion Keyes. He had some advice for us, didn't he, Trish?
Yes, very useful.
He said, I enjoyed Marion's conversation with you, but I wished it had lasted longer. If you have a best-selling author whose every book at this point sells a lot, every book at this point, he's implying, obviously, that some of Marion's might not sell in future, because he is so wise, Brian, who has a humongous following, I would devote 95% of my podcast to her. I mean, Brian.
I know, Brian. Yeah. I think Brian doesn't realise that podcasts can just be as long as you want. There's no end time on them. It's 95% of 5 hours. I don't know.
What's Brian saying? He was mostly taken in his email with how pretty Marion was, which I think says all we need to know about Brian. Also, he's probably not seen a photograph of you and me, has he?
No. Well, he can't have done.
Can't have done.
yes. He did refer to me as the Irish-born lady, though, which is actually factually
correct. He did, didn't he? Yes.
I think the Irish-born lady. Yes.
Thanks, Brian. Well, Brian, if you want to start your own podcast, then be my guest, because it is actually a little bit harder than you would think. But thank you so much for your email, and thank you for taking the time to get that off your chest, young Brian.
Yes, thank you, Brian. I think we may have found the male equivalent of the other Marion, the listener who emailed us earlier this year, who was outraged by our waffling. So we now have Brian and Marion. Yes.
The waffling of midlife women seems to appeal to millions of listeners. If Fee and Jane's success is anything, they've got 23 million downloads on their podcast.
I know,
for God's sake, Brian. Now, you can't please everybody, though, can you, Trish? You simply cannot. So talking of the times when you can't please everybody, shall we start jibber-jabbering about Christmas? Sleigh bells, please, Amanda.
Now it's time for some tips and tricks to make sure Christmas is a festive frivolity rather than a fiasco. I'm going to start with one of mine, which is essentially not to rely on your overtired, overexcited, slightly tipsy husband on Christmas night to put away the turkey before he goes to bed.
Oh Neil, what did you do now?
Poor Neil, he's getting it in the neck this week, isn't he? But I have to say, because it is quite funny, because I went to bed, left him up, and I just assumed he would cover the turkey and put it away and whatever else. Came down in the morning to do more clearing up, and the carcass was on the floor. And the dog...
Margot.
Well, Bridie, I was like, Bridie, the dog, the Labrador.
Oh, my goodness.
Had obviously, I thought she's very clever. She's jumped up on the counter, paws up, pulled it off with her paw.
Paws up.
But it was quite sort of at the back of the counter. And then on the counter, I saw some paw prints, little furry.
Tiny feline ones.
So I have this lovely image of them working together to kind of get this turkey carcass onto the floor and demolish it between them. So needless to say, there was no turkey curry, leftover sandwiches.
That's your tip
for Neil this year. That's my tip.
Christmas tip.
Yeah, put the turkey away. There you go. That's really helpful.
My husband gives our dog bits of turkey and it really affects her ends.
Is she like you? Does she get a bad tummy?
Bad tummy, terrible.
A bit of a gassy tummy.
Gassy tummy. I will say don't give the dog the turkey, for God's sake. None of us can handle that.
Are you sure it's not a Brussels sprout she's popping in? No.
No, she's a menace. They're all menaces. So as you know, Trish, I've written quite a few columns over the years, mainly about parenting and how to deal with the Christmas frazzle. And I have spoken to many experts. So I've done a bit of Googling of those columns in my COVID state, brave me, hashtag brave Lorraine.
Competitive. Yeah.
And I would say that the overwhelming piece of advice on running Christmas smoothly, avoiding the Christmas frazzle, is to have a plan. I know that sounds
a cunning plan.
Very obvious. I interviewed Anita Clare of the Positive Parenting Project, and she said what is helpful is to anticipate situations in advance. So you look at the diary and you anticipate what's happening and think what the possible outcomes could be. So, for example, there is no point making your teens do things that are in the diary that the whole family says are going to be fun when you know they're simply not going to get up till midday. So you just stop that situation happening in advance, ring and talk to people ahead. I think it's better to communicate it all in advance as well. And one of the things we do, relatives are very careless at Christmas. You all slot into those dynamics again. And one of the things that causes the frazzle for us is relatives saying, how did your exams go, to the teenagers?
Yeah.
How's your friends? So I kind of think of all the things that might cause them a little bit of stress. And then I will ring the relatives and say, just don't ask about the exams, please. Don't compare them against each other on exams. Please don't make any comments about what they're wearing and their hair and all of that as well. And I know it sounds obvious, but I do think you need to communicate those boundaries, and then you just don't get into that stressful situation, I think. And also the other thing that I think happens at Christmas, especially around family, is this whole the kind of social media for young people and the Facebook for the older people, of having to put all this stuff up to say what a brilliant time we're having.
Yeah.
And we last year, and I think a lot of experts have said this, we said We just don't want any pictures put on Facebook, please, because our teenagers don't like it when we put pictures of them on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And we just said, let's just not take pictures on the day unless it's, you know, the turkey or the thing, not the people pictures. Keep it just to the pets and the decorations pictures. And that seemed to work quite well, because it does cause a problem, I think, if you don't anticipate these things in advance. You don't sort of define your boundaries of what's going on. Mm-hmm. That would be my main tip.
Yes.
Plan it. Think about the outcomes, negotiate in advance how you want the relatives to be around it.
So that really helps with the sort of emotional stuff, but the practical stuff. Should we talk about presents? Because we've had a good few posts.
Oh, yes.
On some shockers that some of our listeners have had to endure over the years. And we'll start with Helen, who says, my worst present from my husband was a turkey baster. I was vegetarian at the time. I mean, wrong on every level. I don't know. She does say, but he has bought me better presents since. Well, I'm glad to hear that, Helen, because he jolly well needs to, doesn't he?
That's a blind panic present, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where you're just stood in the shop and you just could be overcome with sweat and panic and just buy the nearest Christmas thing.
I know what my beautiful life would wife, vegetarian wife, would like, a turkey baster.
Well, let me tell you, when I was left home and I was vegetarian, my parents were in so much denial about it, they bought me an electric meat carver.
They were lethal.
Well, they were lethal. I used to use it to cut frozen butter.
Oh, end,
which is actually quite dangerous.
I'm sure it was. So no meat ever touched that electric meat carver, did it? No.
Lovely Harriet on the Facebook had a shocker too. This is a good one. She says, the worst present ever was my mother-in-law giving me a pair of, listen to this, control pants after I'd recently given birth to her first grandson. Oh. I think there's a whole book in passive aggressive present buying, isn't
definitely. There? Definitely. There is. I mean, and I think that is a note we must all make for our future selves, isn't it, if we're going to be mother-in-laws. It's just really, really think about the presents you're going to buy them. And I mean, who would buy someone control pants, for goodness sake? It's just, it's beyond.
Well, it's cruel, isn't it? But I think what happens in the family dynamics at Christmas is there's so many personalities involved, aren't there, that you just, people are trying to say things with presents, with everything else that's going on. And sometimes you can slot back into those childhood moments. Mm-hmm. We often find that, you know, especially with your siblings as well. And I remember interviewing Steve Bidoff, who wrote the book Raising Boys and Raising Girls. Mm-hmm. And he said, the best way of avoiding that is to do that giving each other space moment.
Mm-hmm.
So you work out how long you're going to be at a place. And I always think shorter, always take a day off or half an hour off or an hour off. Shorter is better. And then you take a moment. You say, I'm going for a nap. I'm going upstairs. I'm going to have some time out to myself.
Yeah.
That would be my advice as well around Christmas. Yeah. Sometimes I'll take Mabel off to do something she's my youngest, on our own together that no one else wants to do, just to get us away from the situation so that we can come back to it fresh.
And you're talking about Christmas holidays in general, not just Christmas Day. Yeah.
Because
the day itself is obviously the big thing, but then you've got all of the days afterwards as well, which can also, if you've got relatives who are still staying, and as you say, you've got all of these things planned. So the heightened emotional states can kind of continue, can't they? Yeah.
Yes. So should we go back to the present buying faux pas, Trish,
from
the Facebook group? There's a lovely one from Elaine here. Well, I say lovely, so it's quite entertaining. A few years ago, I bought my 15-year-old son a neck massager online on my phone. It also had a heating option, which I thought would be great for his sports aches and pains. As it was on my phone, the photo was small. It was expensive. It came in a large box and I wrapped it. He opened it on Christmas morning, took a look inside the box and handed it back to me and said, I think this might be for you. In the large box was a small vibrator. I gave my son a vibrator for Xmas. Now we hang it on the tree every year with tinsel and love. Now that is worse than your gun.
Oh, yeah, that is worse than shotgun lights. Yeah, I mean, goodness, that is quite brilliant. It sounds like she's got a good son, though, doesn't it? That he could just kind of say that and not, humiliate her in some kind of way. But I wonder if it just stays. Do you think it stays in with the Christmas decorations till next year, then? Who knows? Let's not go there.
I didn't know you could hang vibrators on trees.
No, I didn't.
The world has opened up to me.
But imagine, that would make for interesting conversation when the neighbours come round for mince pie or a drink. Yes. And talking of which, Jean posted about her worst ever festive frazzle. She says, after a very busy pre-Christmas work week, we were invited to a local Christmas Eve drinks party. I had done no Christmas prep, including no presents wrapped. I told hubby we would go for an hour and then jointly wrap the presents when we got back. Oh dear, we both had a great time at the party. 7 hours later, after several, I think that's an understatement, glasses of champagne, at midnight we got home and then I remembered there were no presents wrapped. What a shambles. Husband pissed, lying flat on the bed while I started rapping. I cursed him and Christmas for a couple of hours while I did the lot. Finally got to bed at 3 a.m. Never again.
That's the wife again, isn't it? The woman.
He went to sleep and she had to do the rest.
Saving Christmas. There's nothing I can say about that, Trish. That's exactly what Neil would do, isn't it?
Well, yes. Yeah. And we'll give Emma from the Facebook group the final word because she had this lovely piece of advice, which is actually really helpful. And I'm going to do this. She says, don't try for a perfect day, try for a few perfect moments. More achievable and much less pressure. Now, that's a really good way to look at it, isn't it? And then just pick out the bits that were real highlights for you. I think that's very lovely.
This is just about making memories. That's what all the experts say. They don't remember the presents they got. They remember the things they did, don't they?
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Today, we're about to attempt something that has never been attempted before. Four middle-aged women will be going on air at the same time in what we're calling a podcast mashup. Yes, that's right. It's Postcards from Midlife meets, fortunately, the Christmas special. Two absolute amateurs in the audio world, that's us, will interview two critically acclaimed broadcasters whose award-winning podcast has been downloaded more than 23 million times. I'm not sure how the fabric of the universe will be affected by this many midlife women talking on one show, but we are prepared to take the risk to interview radio legends Fee Glover and Jane Garvey in celebration of their first book, Did I Say That Out Loud? Notes on the Chuff of Life. Fee Glover, 52, is best known for The Listening Project on Radio 4, but also presents BBC TV documentaries and has hosted Newsnight. She writes a regular column for Waitrose Weekend and is a mum of two teens aged 15 and 13. Radio Times columnist Jane Garvey, who calls herself the BBC's difficult woman correspondent, presented Radio 4's Woman's Hour for 13 years after an award-winning stint at Radio 5 Live. She has two daughters, aged 21 and 18. So here we go. Get ready for an oversharing overload.
Thank you for joining us for our Christmas special. Can we begin with the big Christmas question? Tell us what each of you are planning to do this Saturday.
Jane always needs to get Christmas off her chest before I do, because Christmas is just way more of a palaver in Lady Garvey's life than it is in mine. So hold on tight, everybody. Here comes Jane's Christmas.
Can I just say, I think I speak for many women. I just think it's a hell of a lot of work. It's some of the work I take on because I take it on. Other bits of work just seem to have become my responsibility over the years, and I'm not quite sure why. It's partly that I live in the place that's easiest for the rest of the family to get to. Partly that I probably got the most space. Actually, it's all my fault, isn't it? Okay, so I got I take it all back. And we've just seemed to have established a routine which sort of suits everybody, and in a funny way also suits me. But it was much harder when the kids were smaller, because then you just have so much to remember. You know, things like, what shall I get the primary school teacher? Mm-hmm. All of that sort of stuff really does make me quite sleepless and quite anxious. And I have to say that each year I tell myself I shouldn't get into this state. And every year without fail, I do. And here I am again. And I haven't got kids at primary school. They're perfectly capable of sorting things out for themselves. Over to you, Fee.
So my Christmas this year, it's an identikit copy of last year, which is, as everybody will remember and empathise with, it was a last minute change, wasn't it? So this year there will just be me and my kids, and my ex comes round for the day, and that's all lovely, and we have Nancy the dog farting away in front of the fireplace and our two fat cats trying to eat the turkey too soon. And then friends come over later in the day, the whiteboard comes out, and you just have to, I lay myself bare at your altar. I love a whiteboard on Christmas Day for all of the games. The kids get really,
what do you mean, the whiteboard?
So
mean?
We got a great big whiteboard, and we play every single imaginable game.
Oh, my God, Trish, you would love this. You would love
yes,
a whiteboard.
I would.
It's your favourite thing.
That's my best Christmas tip. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you feel a little bit anxious because there's no spreadsheet to look at over the holiday season. The whiteboard can become your best friend.
Yes, I like that.
So we just play a lot of games in a very old-fashioned way well into the night.
Does it get competitive?
So competitive.
Of course.
All competitive, yes. I've never been one of those mums who's, you know, wanted to kind of step back and let everybody win at everything, which is just the slightly kind of more palatable way of saying, get out of my way, you're going to win Scrabble if it kills me. But the kids just, they like it too. So we just get dafter and dafter as the day goes on. And last year was fine, actually. You know, we just had to chop and change a lot, and lots of people couldn't make it, and we couldn't do things, and, you know, what everybody else experienced. So I think this year we feel slightly more confident, you know, that it'll be all right, whatever shape it takes. And actually, you know, we still don't really know, do we? I mean, until we all wake up on Christmas Day, I'm not sure that we all know exactly what we are going to be able to do.
What have you been your best and worst Christmases? Last Christmas special, I told Trish about the time my mum lost her temper so severely she threw all of the Christmas dinner at the patio doors and fled the house. Which is quite high up for the worst Christmas. What have been your best and worst Christmases?
Well, I have had a couple of challenging ones, really challenging. In fact, in our book, did I say that out loud? There is a chapter about Christmas, because as Fee indicated, I am certainly brought to my knees by the festive period on an annual basis. And I think it may be not unconnected to the fact that my first daughter was born on December the 18th. And so I was discharged from hospital on December the 23rd. You know, you're just not going to forget that. And for reasons that I genuinely don't understand to this day, both sets of grandparents were all coming round. There was a great granny in the mix. I had my sister, my brother-in-law, a dog, all crammed into our really quite tiny house at the time, with me utterly unable to breastfeed a child.
Oh my goodness.
Everybody pitching in, giving advice. My dad being sent out to get a laxative because I just couldn't go. You know, all of that. That was Christmas. So that was the Christmas of 1999, closely followed by New Year's Eve of 1999. It was a great party, unless you had a two-week-old when it was.
Higher constipation.
Yeah, and still constipated. So not so much fun. Anyway, and then the other one that was terrible was 2013, when we had a norovirus outbreak on Boxing Day at 4:10 in the afternoon. And unforgettable scenes unfolded.
Carnage.
Absolute digestive carnage. What was really awful was that I was the only person in the house not to get it, which obviously put the pointed the finger of suspicion right at me. So had I brought it in, or had I, in fact, given everybody food poisoning, but not eaten the... Anyway, we still don't know. I've always said it was norovirus. Let's just stick with that. So there's two cast iron examples of pretty challenging periods.
Yeah. Follow that thing.
I don't. I think one of the reasons why I don't get as bothered about Christmas now in adult life is because actually we had some just very odd Christmases as kids. And I'm loath to call them bad Christmases, actually, because I think my parents always tried really hard. But they weren't together, as any child of separated parents knows. Christmas, it's just different. It gets talked about in a different way because it's all about who's going where and all of that kind of stuff. And it's not, you know, it can't have that kind of baby in a manger feel to it. My sister and I, and this was actually my sister's idea, we took off to Paris. I mean, we must only have been late teens. We went to Paris on our own for Christmas one year. So I think we got...
Controversial.
Sounds fabulous.
I think we just, we kind of felt that, you know, that we'd done all of the, you know, the various family obligations. We went to Paris and we stayed in a really, really cruddy hotel somewhere up by the Sacré-Cœur. We wandered around these empty streets on Christmas Day, found a really nice hotel to go and have Christmas lunch in, had a mariachi band. And it was, I mean, it was a great Christmas. You know, that's a great Christmas memory, really. And I do, you know, I do want, I slightly struggle with how we allow ourselves just to get into this love-hate relationship with something. If it never really fulfills expectations, or we're not prepared to admit that that's the way we like it, I do wonder why we keep doing it year after year after year. So I know that when you have kids, you do. You have an overriding urge, don't you, to try and make it all magical and wonderful and all of that kind of stuff. But I think it says so much that at the first opportunity, my sister and I just go on a ferry. Went somewhere else.
You're far away. Yeah, exactly. Jane, you mentioned earlier, it's like you've sort of taken on jobs around Christmas that you didn't even realise you started ending up doing, and ending up doing everything. You know, we've been talking about this earlier, about why do women, particularly midlife women, how have we let it come to this? How has this happened?
Well, I would, in my case, my mum did also do it. And I am going to say this, she's still alive and very much with us. Some of it, I know she took on too much and kept on taking on too much and didn't do it lightly, shall we say. I think she might be willing to admit that. But also, I remember a Christmas where she really was cooking a vast meal for something like 16 people in our quite small house in Liverpool, and also cooking for the houseband lady next door. I remember that bit because I took her lunch round and sat with her for 10 minutes. I mean, only 10 minutes, I should say. When I look back, I just think, God, why didn't I stay half an hour? You know, she worked bloody hard, and she worked hard to make Christmas as good as it could be for all of us, and not just her immediate nuclear family. So I think that did leave an impression that perhaps there was an element of duty in this. And also, I've got some great Christmas memories too. On Boxing Day, we try to have my kids' other grandparents around as well. So they've got the four grandparents together on Boxing Day. And, you know, that's a nice thing and a kind of tradition that we've adopted. So you complain about it at your peril, really. Those of us who are fortunate enough to live in a pleasant environment with heating and we've got a bit of money, how bad can Christmas realistically be?
You know, aren't men in charge of it? Because they're in charge of everything else. I mean, you sort of do make the point about things like that in the book.
Women are, and I include myself here, a bit territorial about it, as we are sometimes about aspects of childcare. You know, sometimes you just think, oh, I don't want him to do it because he won't do it as well as I do, or I don't want him to do it as well as I do. I don't know. That's definitely a factor, I think, unfortunately. Some men are bone idle, Lorraine. I mean, let's face it.
You could do what my mum did when we were 13. She just had, in the manner of you, Jane, had enough, so just stopped celebrating Christmas, and we just didn't have it after I was 13.
Wow. Well, do you think she had
explain why I left home at 16?
So no Christmas day at all, nothing, just like another normal day.
She would say, no, there's no press. This is just a disaster. It's a nightmare. Don't like it. Can't do it. All commercial. It's just not religious. We'd have a lunch, maybe, but she wouldn't engage into the run-up or the run-out of it. It was just a slightly bigger chicken was the situation for Christmas.
Was she happier for it?
Well, I mean, I think you'd have to define happy there, Jane, in the context of stuff generally.
What did that then do to your choices about Christmas?
Well, I married a man who's obsessed with Christmas, who would put the Christmas tree up in September if he could. So they're the swing either way. I mean, I quite like a tradition, but I'm with you on that it's quite a stressful. Yeah, as I am with the COVID at the moment, my main worry is, well, who will do all the shopping and the bits and the pampers and the bobs and the things like that?
Well, maybe you could see, if you don't do it, what happens? An experiment.
Well, no, I've got control issues, haven't I?
Of course, yeah, that's true. That's true. It's just not going to win. Have you managed to hand anything off, Fee, in terms of the preparations and all the work that goes in? Have you managed to offload?
Not really.
No, I haven't.
I've allowed myself to become quite reliant on the online facilities, because it would be lovely, wouldn't it, to be, you know, go strolling around a Christmas market and individually check all your gifts and have, you know, set aside two Wednesdays to wrap up and a Thursday to add ribbons. But that's not the reality for working parents, is it? Jane laughs at me for this, but I book my online delivery slot as soon as they come up at the beginning of November. You know where it says shop from previous order?
Yes.
So I just shop from last year's. Tick, 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 tick. So, you know, everything's there. Mm-hmm. If it was there last year, it'll be there again this year. So that all gets sorted. You know, Christmas presents. I do use a delivery service. Jane and I benefit enormously from working in the centre of town near John Lewis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that gets a battering, you know, during a lunch hour. I tell you what, the thing that I do feel sad about, actually, for my kids' sake more than mine, is that when we did have Christmases back in the day when my parents were together, they had a church element. We definitely put on our Sunday best. It felt like a very different kind of day. My kids, we live in central London. They went to the local schools. They don't know carols. You know, we just have lived, they've grown up in a very different kind of community, and they know loads and loads of other things that I don't know. And I'm very grateful. They couldn't get past the first line of O Come All You Faithful. And there's something about that chilly church stuff that actually is, it's a bonus, isn't it? I mean, you get bored by it when you're a kid and maybe take it for granted if you're made to do it. But it's just such a different atmosphere. And now it's probably a bit too late. My son will be leaving home in a couple of years' time. So maybe this is the year that I march them off to midnight mass.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, your podcast show, which has had, I mean, I keep saying it, 23 million plus downloads.
It's more now, isn't it, Fee? We're always
It's more.
I like to add a million for every time we do a bit of publicity. Yeah.
So it's 37 million now.
Yeah. So, I know you've talked about this before, but...
Yeah, we'll go 26, yeah.
The BBC, powers that be, put you together to make this podcast. They didn't think it was going to be a hit, did they? Just explain to our lovely midlife women why a podcast like this, why you knew it was going to be a hit.
Oh, I don't think we did we?
No, I don't think we did at all.
Look, to be honest, I'd say in the book, I wasn't actually sure what a podcast was. And I wasn't a listener to podcasts when we were asked if we wanted to do one. And Fee and I were both quite busy doing other things at the time. And I used to look at my diary and think, oh, shit, I've got to do that podcast thing on Tuesday. But then gradually, I began to enjoy it more and more. And then equally gradually, I think it's fair to say, we just began to realise people were listening, didn't we? It was weird.
Yep. It was a proper word of mouth snowball. When we first sat down to do it, I mean, there was nothing on a piece of paper. There was no kind of expectation or plan or format even. So the fact that it has become so big, I think will eternally surprise and delight us. But I think what we say in the book quite a few times, because it is important actually, isn't it extraordinary that there wasn't a space anywhere on any of the platforms, not just the BBC, where you could hear women not discussing the things that they were paid to do in their normal jobs, but talking in a different, sensible, hopefully vaguely empathetic way about their lives? It's a success because people need it, isn't it? Not because Jane and I are thoroughly brilliant.
Yeah, it's a very underserved market. You've said before, Fee, that a lot of the podcasts that started that were involved women were about their sex lives, because that's the algorithm. People, you know, that was the thing that seemed popular. But actually, this is just a podcast about women and life generally. If you'd gone to the BBC and pitched this, do you think, to the commissioning editors, would they have picked it up?
Not at the beginning. And I think we did a little pilot together. I mean, God, this must be ages ago, Jane, about 8 years ago now, 7 or 8 years ago, when the BBC was dipping its toe in the podcast waters. So they didn't really know what to expect, and neither did we. So we sat down in a room together and we just burbled away. And that was swept off the table immediately. And actually, there's not very much difference between what Fortunately turned into a very original podcast. But I think it was the tone that we used, it was the topics that we chose to talk about, and it was that meandering style that, you know, we all know as women is how we talk. So we'll do an enormous thing and then we'll talk about some funny things. And Jane always makes the lovely point that you never invite your best friend round on a Friday evening to have only a serious conversation, you know, and then invite somebody round on Saturday only to have a laugh and do bants. Mm. That's just not how life is. So I think it seemed hard in the commissioners' minds to imagine that there would be equal value in both of those things and you could put them together and they'd work. Mm-hmm. But it has worked, Garth, hasn't it?
It has, and so have we, by the way. Blimey, we've worked. I'm a stranger to hard work, really. I've slightly avoided it in my life. I've just done things I liked. This last year, Fi and I have genuinely worked our what's it off.
It's the success. You have to do more when you're successful.
Yeah, maybe I'm not complaining. I'm absolutely not complaining. But in serious mode, we are delighted that it's found a place, mm-hmm. and that people have found it. I think over the last 18 months or so, getting on for 2 years, isn't it now? God, people have needed some sort of comfort, whether it comes in audio form or any other kind of form, mm-hmm. Like never before. And mm-hmm. we're under no illusions. We're a sort of audio comfort blanket mm-hmm. for people who choose to be with us. And that's the point. They've chosen. So they've elected to be part of our listenership. They're not fed us on the radio.
But you weren't friends before, were you?
I would say we were very friendly. I mean, I would occasionally say things about her behind her back, but only to other broadcasters. And I'm sure she did the same. Oh. But we were friendly. And I think we're now much closer than we were when we started. I mean, that goes without saying. Poor Fi is sick to death at the sight of me and the sound of me, I suspect. And I think she might be counting off the hours till the 19th of December at about midnight, when she'll probably be able to say goodbye to me for about 3 weeks. Yeah,
that's when we finish our tour in Bury St Edmunds.
Oh, right.
I mean, it's very, very similar to Coldplay or the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Finishing in Bury St Edmunds. So I just need to say that I'm not sick of the sight of Jane already. It's been such an extraordinary midlife treat.
Yes, that's
fortunately,
true.
Fortunately, to have worked and then to be writing a book. I mean, I just would never, ever, 20 years ago, have imagined that this is what I'd be doing at the age of nearly 53. I just couldn't have imagined it. So it's really, really wonderful. And I think the thing that we really cherish is funny, isn't it? That's a word you only ever say in interviews. Never say that in normal life, do you? But look, we're cherishing.
Let's start saying it in normal life.
So the community, unfortunately, that sends us emails and tells us about their lives and keeps us updated and keeps us in check as well, is just the most wonderful community. So sometimes when we've been out and about on the tour, hawking our wares, you know, we'll be sitting on a stage and you look around and every single one of those, largely women, usually there are 4 or 5 men in the audience who've been dragged along, promise something later that probably won't happen. But you look, you know, around every single one of those women, Jane and I know we could go for a drink with and have a laugh and have something in common with and learn something from. So that is just lovely, really properly spine tingling.
It comes back to the friendships, I think, with the kind of friendship dynamic that you guys have. You know, we have a Facebook group that we have our community on as well. I think it's that seeing friendships celebrated, experiencing a friendship in this process, contributing to the show. And we get all sorts of kind of funny things. You must get a lot as well. Do you get lots of memorable things that you kind of didn't know about, or anything that really kind of struck you that prompted ideas for shows and things?
Gosh, I mean, one of the funniest. Do you remember when we just talked about scabs?
Oh my God, yes.
That was so weird. And we have some astonishing emails, some extremely serious. I mean, extremely serious and heartwarming and tragic, just life enhancing, some of the stuff we're sent. But we also had quite a long running string of emails about scabs, hairy scabs, scabs that people had kept. In one case, a woman had kept a chicken pox scab.
That's nice.
And turned it into a kind of wig for a Cindy, I think it was.
It was one of those chicken pox scabs that when it with came hairs. Off, it had a hair sticking out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so it was useful.
Yes, and practically stayed with you. Yes.
Well, yeah, and practically half the population has an umbilical cord somewhere in their house, hidden in a drawer.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah,
and a woman went on a date, didn't she, Jane, with a bloke who quite proudly displayed on his mantelpiece a jar in which he kept all of his verrucas.
That's right. There we go.
I know.
I think he's still single. I might look him up, actually.
We had a thread, didn't we, Trish, about things smelling differently.
Oh, yes.
Which just went on for quite a long time. Yes. How women had got to menopause, perimenopause, and their sense of smell had changed. And then, and what they meant was their sense of smell, as in they smelt differently, which was quite a long, slightly unpleasant thread.
Yes.
So you've got to know each other deeper in a lovely, and it's lovely hearing your friendship. How do you see each other now compared to how you saw each other 2 years ago? What do you like and love? What niggles you? What's the most annoying thing about each other? What's the most uplifting thing about each other?
The most annoying thing about Fee is how good she is. That's extremely annoying. And I think she, and I'm not going to let her interrupt me now, she is brilliant at our stage shows. She is just incredibly articulate and witty and so quick. She is incredibly quick. I am not so good on stage, but as we were discussing the other day, I'm really good on the journey. So I don't get cross. I just sit quietly or chat and I eat an apple and I'll flick through a newspaper. I won't cause any trouble. It doesn't matter what happens. I won't get grumpy. Whereas the same cannot be said of my little friend who, go on, admit it.
So I've had some right strops. Because I'm just not used to having to go and do something in the evenings, you know, especially after the last couple of years being locked in the house. My DNA has just reacted quite badly to having to leave the house at 3:50 to catch train to Andover.
But enough
this is for the book tour, isn't it? Yeah. The book tour has been tipping you over the edge.
And Jane is the most lovely, calming presence, because she doesn't tell me off or try to kind of soothe me. She literally just sits there like a Buddha somewhere in the station or on a plastic seat in the, you know, we got stuck actually at Hereford station. We had the most terrible journey back. We found ourselves on a rail replacement bus on a Sunday morning across the Welsh border and back so many times. We felt like we were doing a skirmish in some kind of a 16th century battle. But the thing that I really have come to admire about Jane, I mean enormously as well, is that she is fearless in what she puts out there. And I'm much more fearful about it. So one of the reasons why Fortunately has taken off is because Jane kind of stepped over a line just so brilliantly in her anecdotes about home life and finding a sultana in her bra and giving away a lot, actually, but in a very nice, not hey, look at me, or I'm just saying this to be funny way, but in a very honest way. Mm-hmm. I really, really admire that. And she's also doing herself down because she's very funny. She's very funny on stage. And actually, in the second half, Jane always has a glass of something.
And I just say, Jane, speaking in the third person, will not be having anything to drink tonight as I'm feeling a little, expression? My granny, liverish, I think I prefer to say.
Are you? Okay.
After last night, yes.
Okay. Do you spend your social time together then?
We've had lunch, but Fee's been round here. Fee came round. When was that? It was the night I get into a real, like another fussy state and over panicky state. We had a sort of showbiz ladies evening where Fee came, Anita Arnang came. Did Anita come that night? And Claire Balding and Alice came. And I just got all
celebrity
confused.
Dinner party, yeah, Trish, that's what we need to have.
It was relaxed. Yeah. It wasn't really a dinner party. But anyway, I made salad, but gravy as well. And it just, I didn't know what I was doing. I was all over the place. Anyway, Fee was there. I think that's the last time she's been round to my house. To be fair, you know, we really do see a lot of each other. I think if we were also spending huge amounts of social time together, I think you'd start to ask questions.
We would have get divorced.
We really would.
Yes.
God.
Yes. I think it helps that Lorraine lives in North London and I'm in South West.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm over in East London and Jane's over in East West Kensington.
Okay.
Yes. We just know quite a few people who we've worked with over the years who we are connected to. So we have nice nights out with them. And actually, I've seen Jane more regularly over the last couple of years, albeit on Zoom or whatever, than I have some of my closest friends, because we've got that appointment every week. So I think we almost don't feel the need to hook up as well.
Does she WhatsApp you at 6:45 in the morning?
She doesn't like the WhatsApping. I don't understand. At 6:45
in the morning?
I mean, you're younger than you, Trish. That's why you haven't got your head around it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of life's great little pleasures when you wake up in the morning, switch your phone on, and there are hilarious WhatsApp chats going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our podcast, small, tiny, not professionals, is about midlife. Talk us through your, I mean, you're going to hate this. Talk us through your midlife journeys. How have they been?
In terms of change, making change in your own life, I am hopeless. So I overthink every decision, and therefore I don't make any decisions, and then I do, and I find it incredibly stressful. So this time last year, I was still doing Woman's Hour. I did the last one on New Year's Eve that I was ever going to do, and it was a very extraordinary and odd period to be working in that environment and doing that sort of thing. But I'd been thinking about doing it, and Fee knows this because I talked about it to her. I must have been saying I need to stop doing Woman's Hour for about 4 years before I actually did it. And after I got divorced, I drove around in the family car, which had a West Bromwich Albion personalised number plate, for 8 years before I could be bothered changing the car. I'm such a procrastinator. I'm hopeless. But I think I'd have been the same in my 20s. I'm just no good at change. I think Fee's a bit more flexible.
Gosh, I'm a bit more flexible. See, I don't really like staying in things for too long. I think that's always been my problem. I get rather kind of...
I don't think that is a problem. I think that's actually quite a good
itchy thing. Feet. Oh, I don't know. I think my midlife has brought a lot of stability on that, actually. I think I used to rather enjoy the sensation of, you know, jumping off a cliff and thinking, have I packed a parachute? And I don't enjoy that sensation at all anymore. I sometimes get that very self-destructive, self-critical voice in my head that just goes on and on and on. You could have done that better. You could have been nicer. You know, you should have been taller, whatever it is. In almost
you should have been taller.
And I think at the beginning of the menopause, that can almost overwhelm you. Mm. So I was catastrophizing as much about whether or not I'd put the washing machine on the right cycle as I was about global warming. There was really nothing in the middle. It was all being approached with that extraordinary kind of, you know, it's like a woodpecker sometimes in your head. And I think I've just got used to that now. And it's kind of like, well, that's just how I'm always going to think. So let's just bat it away and just crack on. And that's actually a very nice feeling. So I don't worry about worrying, if that makes sense. Mm.
We have discussed the fact that, and everyone seems to say this, the joy of midlife is you really don't care anymore.
Actually, Trish, I do still really, really care.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of managed to put it in a box where it's not quite such harmful kind of hurt. I am upset by that, but let's just walk away from it rather than, you know, let it kind of scar, I suppose. It's just a good tool to learn. Mm-hmm. But it's a funny old phase, isn't it? I mean, it's cursed by its reputation, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because previous generations haven't been able to say how difficult it is, but we've witnessed our mothers, aunts, teachers, you know, maybe become a little bit more morose or difficult or whatever it was. And so what we've sailed into with our unique ability in our generation to really talk about things is almost an amplified version of that. We need to be the generation that then really talks about the upsides and what comes next, which hopefully is better because we've all learnt things and we know ourselves a bit.
We've tried to stay jolly, don't we, Trish?
Jolly?
Yeah,
yes, jolly.
Jolly.
Yeah. Lots of laughing.
It's a big state of change. You know, we both worked in glossy magazines for decades. They are coming to the end of their time and we've come out of them. So the next bit is quite a sort of, it's quite a big adventure, isn't it, really?
And do you feel optimistic that the next phase has something?
I'm over the death maths now, and I've come to the realization I'm not going to win an Olympic medal, that the time is finite, and it's kind of, you know, there's the big stuff I probably can't do. I was quite hit by my eldest leaving home last year. That really knocked me. But I do feel genuinely like there's a second spring element. I mean, when I get through the COVID, obviously I feel even more excited. But I think there's that next bit is... It's an adventure, isn't it, Trish? That's what we think, sort of
think. I think so. I think I've sort of flipped, actually only in the last sort of few months, really, from feeling like I'm going to go and do something like I did before. My life will, you know, go back to how it was before in terms of a job and a career. Then I've sort of realised, actually, that's not what I want at all. And the joy of this, a bit like you guys, but on a much smaller scale, is we had no idea how successful. We just decided to do it as a little side hustle when we were both feeling a bit deranged with menopause, and it's just
taken a bit deranged.
So I think it's that being open to possibilities and not thinking ahead too much. I always just plan ahead year, and I've stopped doing that now, dare I say it, living a bit more in the moment, which is rather nice.
Trish, don't you feel more grounded as a result?
Very much so. Yeah, totally.
I've always had this really boring capacity for contentment, you know, not happy, but content.
Oh, I like content.
I want happy, happy all the time.
No, happy's exhausting. I don't want that.
Right, I think we have to talk about podcats, don't we? Because we have Margot, my cat Margot, and you have Dora and Nancy. Lorraine is not a cat person.
Don't like cats.
Well, you haven't named Fee's cats because Nancy's a greyhound. She'll be horrible.
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. That's
Don't worry. Nancy's my greyhound, but then we've got two great big fat Hackney Tom cats, but they don't get very much of a mention on the podcast.
They don't get a lot of airtime. No, okay. Well, Margot gets quite a lot of mentions. Mainly from Lorraine, who can't stand it. We have a lot of cat tales. Have you had any sort of funny cat tales?
Well, I mean, Dora, though, don't they, Jane? They're always talking to you about
people
Dora.
People do like Dora. I think a lot of people like Dora more than I do, frankly. There's quite a large Lorraine-shaped side of me when it comes to cats. I am the world's most reluctant cat owner. And when Dora does sometimes just literally get into bed with me. Mm. And I find that I don't want that. That's not the kind of thing I want. She's also incredibly aggressive, has some quite unpleasant digestive issues, which means that she can supposedly only eat the most expensive veterinary only prescribed dry cat food that costs about 190 quid for, a kilo. It's driving me up the wall. She won't go out despite being called Dora the Explorer. has taken over quite a large part of the house with a sort of playroom, which is just ridiculous. You know, she'll be two at some, I don't know. I mean, and within 48 hours of her arriving in the house, I bent down to pick her up, bashed my head on a piano, makes it sound like I'm living in a stately home, which I can assure you I'm not. And I had to go to A&E. Yes, it was a grand piano, yeah. So I've still got a very small scar on my forehead. So Dora's not really, she's the kids thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can't now imagine a life without a cat.
I think 50-50. The thing with cats, though, is you don't know what you're going to get. It's not like dogs who sort of mold into your family, I feel. Although ours is a bit, you know, temperamental. But she molds into the family. As cats, you get, they come as cats, don't they?
Yeah, there's no changing them.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to do the death maths on that because she's probably going to live till she's about 20. So if she's only two, you've got a long way to go.
I mean, I am aware that soon it'll be me and her. That's not great. I won't lie to you.
But Margot, Trish, is the longest living animal you've had.
She has. She's 12.
Most of your stuff dies around 8 or 9, doesn't it?
Yes.
Margot's lived longer, hasn't she?
Most of my stuff. You mean my previous... cats, yeah, your beloved cats.
Before you go, did you think of a nostalgia noodle? What have you got for us, Fee?
Well, if I talk slowly, Jane, that'll give you enough time.
You better just guess. I'm afraid I think Lorraine already suspects that I haven't actually read the email. And
don't worry, I'll cover for you. Mine will be shaders and toners.
Yes, the little sachets. Yeah. Yes, well done.
So I did write about shaders and toners in the book, and quite a few people who've read the book have been in touch. If you're of a certain age, they just brightened up an extremely dull couple of years, didn't they? Mm. Because they were only about 32p. You could convince yourself. I mean, I remember the sheer excitement of going to Boots on a Saturday morning and buying the latest shaders and toners and genuinely thinking that it would somehow transport me into a different place, a whole different circle of friends. You know, something enormous was going to happen by adding this 32-piece sachet to my head. I did talk to one of my oldest friends about it the other day, and she was laughing because Deb, she had very blonde hair, and she used to go for all of the warm chestnut and rich mahogany, you know, which was devastating. Take weeks and months to get rid of that stuff. But I've always had very dark hair. I used to buy things like champagne gold, blonde things.
Madness.
Didn't really think that I was going to waft out of my bathroom 20 minutes later as a different person. But I love shaders and toners. Yes. I mean, they've just, you look at the hair stuff now, it's very complicated, isn't it?
And like the sun-in, did you do sun-in?
Oh, we did sun-in, yes.
Yeah.
And actually, I have got nieces and nephews who still do sun-in, so that's still a thing. But they wouldn't have the faintest idea what shaders and toners were. I think the young ones take their hair very, very seriously now.
They're not as seriously as their eyebrows. That's the holy grail. The eyebrow is hours of bathroom activity.
Yeah.
I mean, they look at me and they say, will you be going out with those eyebrows? And I say, yeah, I will. Yeah.
Yeah.
They leave them at home. Well, Jane, is that given enough time? Has Fee given enough cover?
She has. Not for the first time. I'm sure I'm the oldest person in this conversation. And I vividly remember decimalisation really for the impact on the price of a lucky bag. Do you remember lucky
bags?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lucky bags changed. I think they were sixpence and they became 2.5p overnight. And I was stunned by this. I used to really save up for lucky bags. They were my favorite thing. You go to the sweet shop. I remember the smell of old-fashioned confectioners. Well, they weren't old-fashioned at the time. They were just confectioners.
They were thoroughly modern.
They were very contemporary. But this would have been, 1971 or two? I don't know. I think decimalisation was 72. Anyway, I mean, I've tried to explain this to my kids, who obviously nod off, but it was an incredible thing that money just changed overnight. So 2.5p just seemed an extraordinary thing to me. And you had to fiddle about looking for the half pence. That was the extraordinary thing in order to get your lucky bag. And also, the big thing about lucky bags was you very, very occasionally, and it was a really brilliant thing, you got a water pistol in a lucky bag.
Yes, and the little one.
The really tiny one, but they were so rare. And if you got a water pistol, you'd be the queen of the playground. It was just the most extraordinary thing. That's definitely my trip down Nostalgia Boulevard for you.
Thank you very much for that. So final thing then, you've got the podcast, you've got your book. What happens next? Fortunately, is there going to be some kind of musical? Will there be merchandise? Can we get mugs with your faces on? What's the next step?
Well, I think if we did merchandising, I think we'd like to go big, wouldn't we? So, I mean, I think a couple of coach trips would be a very good idea.
Yes.
I think so. Seriously, some day trips I think would be cracking good fun.
Yep.
What we're trying to avoid is just a tote bag. I don't want to end my career in a tote bag.
I've got a tote bag now from every literary festival we've been to.
So she's got two.
No, I've got four. Shut up. Miserable cow. Possibly. No, I can't say that. Sorry. So I can't.
No, you can't say that.
Jane, is that like when you announced you decided not to do Strictly to all those people at Cheltenham when I came to see you? That was
Did I say that? That was awful.
You said it several times.
Fee almost certainly made me say that thing because you're not supposed to say it. You're supposed to forever keep quiet if you say no to Strictly. But in fact, mentioning Christmas, we're all looking forward in this house, and that would include even my 88-year-old father, to Christmas Day Strictly because my ex-husband is on it.
Brilliant.
And I can't break any showbiz confidences, but it's already been done.
Would he be wearing the colours of West Bromwich Albion?
No, he's wearing an absolutely beautiful frock.
Well, thank you both so much for this, fortunately, Postcards from Midlife mashup.
Thank you both very much.
Now we've had nostalgia noodles from the gurus, the radio broadcasting millions and millions of download experts. What have you got that can follow that then, Trish? Come on.
Wow, I don't know. Lucky bags and shaders and toners. Well, a bit easier because I've gone Christmas. We've gone Christmas themed, haven't we, for this Christmas special?
Yes,
and I was thinking, I don't know, this popped into my head and horrified me. And I was like, how has that entered my brain? Do you remember There's No One Quite Like Grandma? by the St. Winifred's Schools Choir.
Oh, I do.
Christmas number one. Christmas number one.
Dreadful.
Dreadful. So, of course, once it was in my head, I had to start looking it up. And it was surprising because I don't know that I could tell you what decade it was. But so can you tell me what year do you think that was?
Well, it feels like I would have still been at home. So maybe late 80s? No?
No, you're... No.
19- My miles out.
1981. And it knocked John Lennon starting over.
Oh, you're joking.
The top spot. I mean, it's quite something to go from
comedy record to something.
Anyway, when I watched the little video on YouTube of it, I mean, the little girl who's the lead singer, she does sound like she sucked a helium balloon. It's very squeaky. And they reunited a few years ago for a charity, I think for Age Concern, which is great. But I'm afraid to say they
got worse. Can't sing.
Doesn't sound like a helium balloon, but I don't think careers on the stage in the West End for the singing voice.
I'm not a big fan of choirs. Is that a controversial opinion to have? I don't like it.
You don't like it? What?
No, it makes
standing too closely to people.
I don't like that. I'm jealous of anyone that can sing, obviously, because my great regret wish in life. Mm. But I don't know. It makes the hairs on my arms stand up. I feel like something must have happened that I've blanked out of my memory with the choir situation. Oh, right.
Okay, we might have to explore that with your therapist.
Yes.
So, yes.
We're my therapist, Trish. That's why I do this podcast, God's sake.
So tell me about your little festive nostalgia noodle.
Well, mine's a bit of an obvious Christmas one, but it's what I would call the gateway drug for me, this one. So do you remember the Snowball?
Yes, cocktail? The drink. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So my in our house, my parents didn't really drink. My dad might have had a beer at some point. You know, with that generation didn't really have drinks in the house, did they? They went out to do drinks, not like us guzzling bottles of wine at home.
Vino in front of the cupboard.
Vendors every night. Anyway, so we would only have alcohol generally at Christmas, and we would, as older children, be allowed to have a snowball.
A snowball.
After 12 o'clock on Christmas Day. And do you know what's in it?
I don't know. I remember it being very sweet.
This was my first introduction to alcohol. It's Advoca, which is basically egg whites and some low-grade alcohol. And then you'd have half a pint of lemonade.
Oh, my God.
And some pure lime cordial in it. I mean...
That is very strange. That's not how I'm remembering it. But I probably had like a sip of one once or twice, maybe.
My sister and I would manfully struggle through sipping it being grown up. It's absolutely disgusting.
I bet it was. Do they still make them?
Yes, they do. You can still have a snowball.
Oh, yes.
And that kept me going until I discovered my next drink. Trish, what do you think
my
next drink?
Which was like hard gin, whiskey, bourbon.
Baby sham.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Yes. And then maybe half a cider.
No. Then I went too far because obviously I don't have the moderation dream. Oh, okay. I went straight to Diamond White.
I just know it was hardcore. No.
Well, I can't remember anything that happened under the influence of Diamond White. But it all started with the Advoca at Christmas, you see. Let that be a warning to your kids.
Brings us to the end of this Postcards from Midlife Christmas special and the end of 2021 too, as this is the last episode of the year. But we will be back in mid-January with more brilliant guests and chat, helpful advice and jibber-jabber about the ups and downs of being in midlife.
Yes. Now, if you want to subscribe via your podcast provider, the episode will pop into your app, so you won't need to seek us out. We will come to you. And in the meantime, Trish and I will be on the private Facebook group with all our brilliant midlife gang, keeping the conversation going. So if your mother-in-law gives you a pair of control pants this Christmas, please come and tell us about it so that we can support you and sympathise with you. So all that's left to say for 2021 is
Happy Christmas!
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.